Hey there, and thanks for tuning into episode 112 of the Eyes Free Sports Podcast. My name is Greg Lindberg. Here on episode 112 of Eyes Free Sports, we are chatting about audio description, specifically when it comes to live sporting events. And so we have two members from the Mind's Eye community joining us. And Mind's Eye is a nonprofit in the St. Louis, Missouri area that provides a ton of audio described live events, including sporting events, live theater, as well as museums. In addition, Mind's Eye provides adaptive sports opportunities to the blind and visually impaired, and also has Mind's Eye Radio, which I'm proud to say streams the Eyes Free Sports podcast. So let's go ahead now and get rolling with episode 112 of the Eyes Free Sports podcast. All right, so here on this episode of Eyes Free Sports, we are chatting about audio description, and specifically audio description for sporting events. And we have two awesome guests joining us today to talk about this. One is an actual audio describer, and the other is involved in audio description and also a multi-sport adaptive athlete, which we can get into as well. So first, I would like to introduce Megan Harms, who is the Arts and Culture Director for Mind's Eye. Megan, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Super excited to dive into your role, and just as a sports fan in general, I know we have a lot of sports fans in addition to blind athletes who listen to this podcast, so really, really excited to have this conversation.
Me too. Should be fun.
Definitely, yeah. And then we also have Liam McCoy, who is a quality control specialist at Mind's Eye, also a member of the board of directors for Mind's Eye, and an adaptive athlete as well. Liam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Really excited to have you on as well and get into your blind sports journey in addition to audio description. So Megan, why don't we kick things off with you here first?
Absolutely.
Why don't you just tell us about your education and your professional career?
I have a bachelor's degree in arts management, which for most people means nothing. I came to audio description in a really roundabout way. I did not have any prior experience or connection with the blind community. I worked in retail management for 15 years, which might be what happens when you have a degree in arts management. And, you know, I'm sure I had some passing interactions with people who are blind. But there was no, a lot of times when you talk to people who are audio describers, it's because they had a parent or a grandparent or some sort of connection. I had no meaningful connections in any way with anyone in the blind community until I was basically with Mind's Eye. I left retail because I never really attended working retail at all, much less for 15 years, and became a transcription editor. And a company that I was working for, which is basically editing captions and subtitles, the company that I was working for put out a call and said, does anyone have any experience or training with audio description? We want to expand. I'd never heard the words audio description before. Didn't know what it meant. You know, I'm in the Midwest. We're in St. Louis. And I did some searching, and I found that you could get training in, you know, on the East Coast or the West Coast. And there was really nothing in between. But I did send a reply that said, if I find some training, you know, please keep me in mind. And again, I'd never heard the words audio description in my life. And about a week later, a Facebook post for Mind's Eye, which is right down the street from me, said that they were having an audio description training. And to say it was kismet is an understatement. So I went to the training, and immediately at that time, they had volunteer describers. And that was several years ago. And I became a volunteer with them first. And then they hired me to run the audio description program.
Wow. Wow. Very interesting. It's always fascinating how, you know, our sightlings, so to speak, out there eventually connect with the blind community and
right.
And get so deeply involved as you have. So that's a great little story. Yeah. So as far as your specific roles and duties with Mind's Eye, just talk to me about those.
Sure. So as when I first started as a volunteer, I learned pretty quickly that I don't really like to be a live describer. I didn't really like to have to think of my feet, and I got really nervous. So I started out just doing things like doing tours at the zoo or doing things that were more casual. And as our program progressed, we went from doing, 7 or 8 events a year, to now last year, I think we did 164 events during the
Wow.
year, and we really expanded into different types of audio description. And then as I came on board to work for Mind's Eye, my role now is not just audio describer. So I am an audio describer. I describe lots of things, including live theater now. But I take care of all of the logistics. I'm the contact with all of the venues and the partners, and I do the contracts and the invoicing and all of the things that are involved with that. If it's for theater, it's getting scripts, or it might be getting lineups for themes, or whatever. All of that information comes through me, and then I also head up a team of what are now paid contractors who are audio describers. So then I get all the dates together, and then I kind of divvy them out to the describers. So we have, we don't have someone describing Blues hockey that has never been to a hockey game before. So,
Right.
I'm the person that kind of divvies them out and does all of that.
That makes sense. A lot of hats you wear, though, it sounds like. So I am definitely curious your definition of audio description. Obviously, people are probably more familiar with like audio describe movies, TV shows, content that's already been created, versus live performances, probably a little bit newer, not as common out there. So in general, if you just want to provide a definition and an overview of audio description.
Sure. And I have a very vague definition. It's just a verbal description of visual elements. Because people fall into that trap of basically what you just said. People, oh, there's only audio description for movies or television. Well, no, there's audio description for everything. There's audio description. We do live sports. We are doing tours at the art museum. We do mostly what we do is live theater and opera and dance. There's a wide range of what we do for audio description. So my definition is very vague so that it covers everything.
Gotcha. Very interesting. So then in terms of preparing for an event, whether it is a sporting event, like you mentioned, an opera, dance, musical, something that is live, how would you prepare for that event? What goes into your process of getting ready to prepare for that?
I'm glad that you asked that because I think a lot of people, particularly sighted people, I am fully sighted. I think a lot of people think that you just show up and then you just
Right.
say what you see, which is just not at all what happens. I just described Opera Theater of St. Louis, their New Works Collective. And aside from having the libretto, which is scripts in opera, aside from having that in advance and being able to read that, I went to rehearsals and previews. Some places will send us a video. We send out a questionnaire to actors, so we can describe them in our introductory notes properly and respectfully, so that we are describing. We, for instance, for New Works for Opera Theater, I had 15 minutes of introductory notes because there were three operas. So that's a
Wow.
There's a lot to describe there. And there were three not related in any way operas. They were three totally different operas. They were only 20 minutes long, but you still have to set up three different operas with very different people, very different characters. So I send out a questionnaire that ask, vague questions like, how do you describe yourself? Do you say white, black, African American? Are you a wheelchair user? Any terms that they want to give me so that we can describe them in the introductory notes. And so I have a basis for describing their character throughout the show or opera or whatever it is. So for theater, there is a lot of background information. We might even watch videos of a different performance of that show if we can't get a lot of places we can't get a video from, but there might have been a movie made about it, so we just have a better understanding. We might read background materials. For sporting events, of course, it's different. One, there's no script to follow. You don't know what's going to happen at all. But of course, you know who's playing. You know what the team is. I personally, one of my favorite things to describe is St. Louis Cardinals baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan, and it's a good excuse for me to say that I can't work because I have to watch the baseball game. But I do, for something like baseball, it's important to know things like, if someone has an unusual batting stance, we like to point that out. I personally, and Liam can attest to this, to being listening to many games, I personally love to know what mascots are doing in the stadium because when we're describing a sporting event, we're in the stadium. We're not watching a monitor. The people we're describing to are in the stadium, that we're in the stadium with them. So I like to describe where Fred Bird is in the stadium and what he's up to. We describe what's on the big screen, the Jumbotron, other things that are happening. Last year, I even described a scuffle that was happening in the section next to me when someone got kicked out of the stadium. Because those are all things that you experience when you're at the stadium. So that's it's obviously it is more off the cuff. You still know what's happening in general. I like to know in advance things like which Cardinals baseball players wear high socks, which is, for whatever reason, I find very interesting. You know, who's got their uniform that's not quite right? We have a new catcher now who wears a bright yellow batting gloves. So those are things that I like to point out. So there is preparation, even for an event that you don't know what's going to happen. You still are preparing. And one thing that I do for all of my events is I have what I call a word palette. And that means I just have a list, a physical handwritten list, because that helps me remember of, if I go to a baseball game, I write out, and I might not even look at the list, but I know that they're on there. So I write out a list of words for outfielders or a list of words for hitters or for pitchers. And it might just be words like blasts, bloops, hits, or dives, or speeds down the baseline, or things like that. And then for ballet, I might have a list that says, sachets, or pirouettes, or twirls, leaps, that sort of thing. And for me, like I said to begin with, I get nervous when I have to describe things. And it's just about the more prepared I am, the better I feel about it, the better my description is. And I'm not just saying he runs, he runs, he runs over and over and over. So I like to have a word palette for every event that I go to.
I have
Very
a
interesting.
similar example of that, similar to what Megan was just talking about, the Blues NHL hockey game went to that had description. There was a section of people dressed as referees, supporting the referees. I think I'd seen something similar on social media where people go intentionally to cheer the referees and make a big deal of that. And I think it was like a special dedicated night to referee safety or something. There was a section of everyone dressed as refs and that were cheering, and the describer pointed that out. And it's kind of one of those things that, if you could see, you would be constantly looking over, to the section and kind of keeping up with that
That's
throughout the
great.
night. And I really enjoyed him, really wanted him to update on this section of referees.
Right. Very interesting. Appreciate that input there, Liam. So Megan, I'm curious as far as like play-by-play, describing the action, your role compared to like a play-by-play announcer on TV and radio, what would you say the similarities are and the differences are?
I would say compared to a television announcer, they're very different because
Sure.
you can watch television announcer could be talking about anything, and they might go back to play by play. It's much closer to a radio announcer, and if we have people that are there, they want to listen to the game at home, and radio is great. If you're at home, you don't necessarily aren't going to know what's happening in the stadium anyway. But if you're in stadium, there is a difference. So we are doing play by play. We are doing regular radio announcing play by play that happens. One main reason to listen to audio description versus just listening to your radio in the stadium is the delay. That's
Right.
not one reason. That's the number one reason. Especially like at Busch Stadium, you might be hearing the announcer say, you know, the pitcher's getting set when the fireworks are already going off because there's already been a home run. So there's a long delay. And if you want to have the experience at the same exact moment, that's where audio description comes in. Then all the extra additional things. So we're also, we have no commercials. So we never stop for commercials. We are describing the things that are happening between innings. And of course, particularly in baseball, it's quicker now. And we have a describer, Don, who describes a lot of the Blues games. And his daughter, it happens to be on the Blues. Liam, you might be able to help me out here. The team in between that comes out and cheers, but also clears the ice. So Don loves to describe what his daughter is doing on the ice. Like she's squeegeeing the ice, which I think is great. It's very interesting. And you know, they tell you when the Zamboni or the non-Zamboni comes out and that sort of thing. So it definitely is play by play, and there's no veering away from, you know, now we're going to do an interview for 5 minutes and not tell you what's happening in play by play. It keeps going.
Wow. Very demanding, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is. We try to have, for sporting events and circuses, we try to have two describers because it's a long time, especially, right. You know, baseball can be forever. There have been times when it's like, okay, guys, this is the seventh inning. I'm here by myself. I just got to take a nacho break. I'm sorry. You know, I'll be back to you in 2 outs. I'll come back or something. So we try to have at least two describers and an ambassador who is, the ambassador's job is just to troubleshoot, make sure everybody can hear everything. Or take over for me if I need a nacho break.
Right, right. Interesting. So then as far as the technology that you guys use, so I'm curious from your perspective, Megan, and then Liam's as a consumer of, you know, the description, talk to me about how, you know, is it a headset? Is it a microphone you use, Megan?
Sure. We have a couple different varieties of devices. What we use for really all of our sporting events is an app called Live Voice. And we use a headset mics that are attached to a tablet. So we're not just holding up a phone. We're actually using professional microphones, but they are attached to a tablet that transmits within stadium or technically outside of stadium, but you have to have a secret code to know how to get to it if you're outside of the stadium. That has a geolocation. So once you enter the building, if you have the Live Voice app already downloaded, all you have to do is walk in or get close to the stadium, and the title will pop up. And then you just press play, and we start talking, basically. We have the ability to mute and restart, do, you know, regular things with it. It's really easy. It's free to download the app. So it's free for patrons to use. And I think Liam could probably tell you better how easy it may or may not be to use. I think there are places where, you know, the Wi-Fi signal on someone's phone isn't as great, or, you know, we also have the option. We don't assume that everyone has a smartphone available. So we do have tablets available that people can come to the ambassador and pick up a tablet to borrow during the event too.
Gotcha. And Liam, as far as your perspective, just provide kind of an overview from your standpoint.
Yeah, and the app works fine with iOS VoiceOver. It's very simple, you know, text-based list of, you know, like Megan said, the location will pop up where you can enter a code or a QR, and it comes up with channels and a play stream button. The stream is online or offline, and a play pause. I've never had any issues with it.
Right. And as far as like the volume, I assume you can just adjust the volume and different settings.
Yes. Gotcha. And on the app, it's just based through your phone, and you can, there's a toggle to do like the speaker phone or the headset or regular phone speaker. And then the non-phone option, the original like audio description, the handsets have just two tactile buttons, an up and a down, that you use for volume. but it's already powered on. So when you show up to an event, you just have to get your headphones plugged into it, the 3.5 millimeter jack, and just use the up and down volume that's already powered on. You don't need anything else besides the volume.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
Yeah, those are our radio frequency devices that we use for basically everything else other than sporting events. A lot of live theater. The reason we don't use live voice all of the time is because we still have a hard time convincing theaters that people should be allowed to have their phones on, which you have to have your phone on to listen to live voice.
Right.
A lot of places don't really understand that you're using it as an assistive technology. So they would rather you not have your phone on, even though, and I try to explain this, these people are blind or partially sighted. They're not looking at their phones. There's nothing happening on the screen. The screen just says play. So they can have their phone in their pocket or in their purse or, you know, wherever it is. But there's the point that there's a phone on and it might ring or, you know, whatever. So we use radio frequency technology for theaters. And those are just, like Liam said, little small handheld devices. And with those, we are same thing. Actually, in theaters, we don't use a headset mic. We use a stenographer's mask because often we're in the back of house or we're somewhere where someone could hear us. So we use a stenographer's mask that we hold up to our face and it mutes, basically, so no one around us can hear us.
I see. Interesting. And that kind of leads me to another question about like where you sit, Megan, or the other describers, where they sit compared to, you know, the consumers of the description. Are they kind of far away just to prevent any kind of echo or?
Yeah. So it really depends on where we are. We, for instance, we provide audio description for every St. Louis City SC match, which is our our Major League Soccer team. We're in the press box. So we have amazing seats in the press box.
Yeah.
So we're not close to anyone. No one else can get up there. In Busch Stadium for Cardinals games, we are in front of a camera well. And for hockey games, that's the place that we're the closest to the crowd. There might be people literally 3 or 4 feet from us. However, our listeners can be anywhere. They can be anywhere in the stadium. Because we're using app-based technology, it doesn't matter how close they are to us. We have found, particularly at Busch Stadium, partly because Lighthouse for the Blind St. Louis offers half-price tickets for every game that we audio describe.
Oh, wow.
That section of those seats that they sell are very close to where we are. And it's convenient in case there is a problem or someone doesn't understand how to use live voice, or if they just want to talk to us. We're close to them, so they can come down and ask a question or, you know, say something. There is also an option. They're in live voice on the screen where the listener is listening below the play and pause button. There is an email button, so you can actually click that button and directly email us. Now, if an audio describer is actually going to, you know, see that email while they're describing is pretty questionable, but we will get the email at some point. So if it's just a, hey, we liked what you were doing, that's an option. But so it doesn't matter where they are, actually, anywhere in the stadium. And we actually described for the last couple of years, we've done the goal ball tournament, the Missouri School for the Blind. And that has been very interesting and very fun because those are the tournament. So it's several schools throughout the nation that come to the tournament. I don't know if you've ever been to a goal ball tournament, but it's very, very quiet. It's an extremely quiet sport.
Yo.
And everyone else that's there is blind because they're all other teams. So it's not like you go to a goal ball match or a game and, you know, it's full of, you know, the family members of everyone that's there, because a lot of these teams are coming a pretty far distance. So mostly who's in the audience are other teams, or there's a girls team and a boys team. So maybe it's the boys are watching the girls game. So everyone in the audience is blind except for a few coaches or a few parents, but also their parents back home can also be listening because we're using app-based technology. So I think that's really great. Or last year we had a team tell us that they lost earlier in the tournament. They were driving back home, but they were able to listen to the championship game on the way back because we were describing. So that was pretty cool.
Very cool.
I like those tournaments. I've been to those. And yeah, it's the students, you know, are waiting in between games and, you know, are pretty good at following. Yeah, it just adds a whole other element of being able to understand what's going on with the audio description. And, you know, they could be outside in the hallway where they might be able to, you know, talk louder with someone or have food or something and still be following it. And yeah, just a lot more, you know, independence having the audio description. There's also like smaller sized group tours and like different environments you might be in with audio description. Where I've gone on a walking tour in local parks where there's a small group and then they arrange to also provide audio description. So the describer is actually walking along with me through this walking guided tour. And they kind of let you make the decision of, you know, how many people there are and if you would like to use the electronic equipment or if it wouldn't make that much of a difference. They can just speak, you know, without any type of microphone or amplification, if that works as well. And then Megan and I have kind of discussed that with the art fair and where it's kind of crowded, and even you know, if you would have trouble hearing and like to use the equipment, even if you can hear without it, or even if you don't have any trouble hearing, we realized it gives you more freedom to walk around the exhibit without having to make sure you stay right by the describer. You know, it is kind of nice to still have the headphones and not to be, you know, paying attention to staying close to each other and walk around.
We try to give as many options as we can to make it as accessible as we can. We're not, you know, we're not there to add extra barriers, and which sometimes happens, which sometimes, you know, here, oh, now you need this app or you need to know how to work this equipment or you didn't bring your headphones or, you know, you don't have the dongle that connects your headphones to this device or that sort of thing. So we try to think ahead of all those things that can happen. We also send out an email in advance if someone lets us know they're coming that says, remind, you know, this is a reminder to bring your own headphones for your own phone for this, or let us know if you don't have technology, we can bring a tablet for you. So we try to do what we can to head off problems.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't realize there's so many different options and a lot of factors involved. And, you know, as far as accessibility, it sounds like you provide pretty much every possible option, you know, whether, like you said, someone is a smartphone user or does not have one or whatnot.
We try.
Cool. I did want to ask you about the Paralympic Games, Megan. So I know you did have a chance to work with NBC to describe the Paralympics at one point, if you just want to talk a little bit about that experience.
Sure. Yeah. That was the Winter Olympics in 2022, Beijing. I was not in China, but here's a fact that I think a lot of people that know, most people weren't in China that weren't athletes. A lot of the TV personalities, they were also not there. We were all together in Connecticut at the NBC Sports location, which was really interesting. It was really when I got my NBC badge and it said talent on it. I was like, well, look, I'm talent. This is what I'm on. Because I'm the audio describer, they consider me talent, which was fun. Oftentimes it's just, you know, access provider. So it was really interesting to get that in studio sort of perspective. It was really different because I'm used to being in stadium. And having everything, you know, everything happening right there in front of me. So, of course, we were watching monitors. I only did the Paralympics. There was a team of three people who had done the audio description for the Olympics. And I was the fourth person that was brought in to help alleviate some of the very long hours that those three were working on. So I was a part of a team of four with descriptive video works. And aside from not being live, it was also interesting for me because I also had a producer talking in my ear the whole time. And I'm very used to making my own decisions and to saying what I know is for what I believe is good audio description. So I'm very used to, having my palette, my word palette of these are the words that I'm going to use. But also I'm used to having a lot of preparation, a lot of time to prepare for, this is the team that I'm going to see. Well, you might not know what team that is until they win or lose the game for. Or you might not know what sport you're going to have until you got into the booth. I spent a lot of time preparing for hockey. And then I got into the booth and they said, literally, I was at the booth. They said, okay, actually, you're doing curling. And I said, what? Oh my gosh. And they're like, 3, 2, 1. I'm like, oh, curling. Okay, wow. Here we go. Thankfully, I had been preparing in general because there was a list of like, here are the things that you could possibly do. But that was not high on my list because I didn't think that I was going to be the one that was going to have to do curling because there were people, there was a person who actually is a curling player. I don't know what they're called, a curler. He was on the team. So I thought he was going to, he would probably get assigned to everything. So I had a panic at that moment. So thankfully I had, some things written out, but it was very interesting. It was very educational for me to learn how that process works with live sports when you're not in stadium. Also when you have a producer that's telling you, when to say things or not to say things. Also, we had to, in that case, we also were working around the announcers. So the patrons that were listening were not just hearing us, we're also hearing the television announcers. So we had to try to not step on what they're saying, but their job, of course, is to talk the whole time. Also to get the point across as to what was happening, not repeat something that they just said. I was very used to, they can only hear me, so I have to tell them everything that's happening. So it was a learning curve, I will definitely say. I think that some of the other describers on that team came from a broadcast background, so they were much more comfortable in that situation, whereas someone like me that was coming from early an audio description background, it was a little harder for me, I would say. And there's, because we're in St. Louis, we have a very specific local community. We try to do a lot of things in advance. Like I just said, we send out an email in advance. We make social posts in advance. We do all of these things to try to make sure that we're tearing down as many barriers as we can. And it was sad when I got back from Connecticut and said, okay, everybody, what did you think about my live description? And I couldn't find a single person that actually heard me live. Some people found me on the app and could listen on the app because it was too complicated for them to figure out how to find audio description for that event at that time. And this is just the way the world works, depends on what TV you have, what cable provider you have, how your remote control is set up, all of these different things. And if you don't know there's going to be audio description for an event until 2 days before the event happens, I had someone say that I was going to buy a new TV. I was like, well, that's crazy. You were going to go buy a new TV so you could hear audio description for this event? Because they didn't know in advance, well enough in advance, to try to figure out. And then it was like, yeah, there was a list of 10 things I had to do to figure out how to listen to audio description, when instead I could just wait to the next day or, a couple hours later and find it on the app and I could listen to it. Which to me was a bummer, because the whole point of having live audio description at a live event is so that you can listen to it live.
Exactly.
It was a good, it was a good learning experience on many levels. And I'm glad that there's more and more and more audio description for all of these events. And it was great to have the app out there for people to listen to. And it was everything. For the Paralympics, they described everything. So it was, not just the championship match of the most interesting sport. It was everything that was in the Paralympics had audio description.
Yeah, interesting. But that's such a great point about, you know, the accessibility of the audio description in terms of actually accessing it and finding it. And there's so many services out there, live TV, streaming, you know, on demand. Yeah. So it's can be quite a challenge.
Yeah, it's one thing to say you're providing audio description, and it's another thing for people to actually be able to find your audio description. And that's a problem that we have in general. Like we go to events where we're providing audio description and no one comes, and they say, "Oh, well, I didn't even know you were going to be there." You know, that's on us. So I think the world in general needs to know that audio description is available, and we need to make sure that everyone knows how to get it.
Yep. No question about that. Alrighty, so then moving back over to Liam. So Liam was definitely curious about your background, your eye condition, if you just want to kind of give us an overview of your life and your journey.
So I have albinism. It's a genetic recessive condition where both parents are carriers, and just interferes with melanin, the pigment production, the pigment melanin. And so melanin is in the hair, skin, and eyes. So they, you know, light detecting cells in the retina, the photoreceptors are pigment. So it just causes like an underdevelopment of the retina and like the resolution of vision and the iris, the colored part of the eye, not having pigment to kind of act like an aperture and filter out the light. And so a lot of light sensitivity and just like legal blindness. In good, like, controlled lighting, and then in bright lighting, it's worse. It's not degenerative in a way that other, you know, inherited retinal conditions are. It just doesn't develop in the first place, so kind of underdeveloped retina and optic nerve.
Sure, I see. So then in terms of Mind's Eye, I'm curious how you discovered Mind's Eye and kind of got involved, you know, both attending these described events as well as from a sports standpoint.
So I've lived in St. Louis area 10 years. I've moved here after college. What I had seen videos of goalball just like online and social media during college. It was kind of my first kind of introduction or realization that there was adapted sports. So I went to public schools and did not grow up in St. Louis, which is where the Missouri School for the Blind is here in town. I lived elsewhere in Missouri. And yeah, I just went to public school and did not have much exposure to adapted sports for other students with vision impairment. So I started being interested in goalball just from seeing it online, but had not had a chance to try it. And the NFB, I think, is part of the National Fitness Challenge, or USABA, had a Paralympic Activities Day at the School for the Blind here, and was able to go and try many different sports. And they had tandem bikes and the bikes with, you know, 8 seats, and goalball, and they had a beatball team and soccer, and you could go on the track, just pretty much try anything, kind of like an open house at the school, and you could try any different sport. Met the beatball team and started playing beat baseball, and I liked that, you know, it uses like the audio aspect on both sides of the game, like the offense and defense. You can use the sound of the base to determine which base to run to. Just, you know, the more finely tuned your hearing is, the more precise you have to be to run to the correct base and in a straighter line. You know, the straighter the better. And the fielding side, where you have to kind of be precise to be able to pick up the ball, and just liked that aspect of it where it just wasn't focused on sight. It was focused on your hearing.
Gotcha. And I know you are a member of the Gateway Archers, which is the beatball club under Mind's Eye. And if you just want to talk about any tournaments you've competed in and any memories, any moments that come to mind.
I was doing beat baseball and learning about adapted sports. And so Mind's Eye hosted a beat baseball event as more of a volunteer fundraising event. And my beatball team was participating in that. And so I kind of played in that event without understanding what Mind's Eye was or who they are, if I'd met them before. And it's kind of was networking and getting to know people. And then that was before they started their meatball team, the Gateway Archers, and started playing with them. And then kind of learned that Mind's Eye also did the audio description of different audio described events. And then I started, you know, wanting to attend those as well, and trying these different audio described like adapted sports. And now we have, you know, beat baseball as well as goalball and Achilles running club and a blind hockey club. But those are separate from Mind's Eye.
Exactly. Yeah. So in terms of some of the audio described sporting events, just had a few more questions for you, kind of on your experience. What would you say the biggest differences are, you know, if you're attending a sporting event specifically without any kind of audio description versus actually having access to that? And how does that kind of change your fandom, your enjoyment of the game and the action?
Yeah, so I've really enjoyed going to the audio described events. And kind of has made me realize, you know, like growing up, I didn't really have an interest in attending live events. And could have been a big part of it was that there was no description or understanding of what was going on. And even, you know, I feel like people think if you have, you know, some level of partial sight, you're able to kind of, you know, just work harder and compensate for it. And then having the auto description kind of realize stuff that I was oblivious to and maybe realize how much it helps, even if you have some sight. I feel like it helps things that you may have missed or not going, what's going on. Even like from the aspect of playing adapted sports where it's so audio based, it's also striking how quiet the gameplay is of the mainstream sports. I'm always surprised how.
Right.
You know, the stadium is very loud before the game starts with the loud music and the crowd. And then it's so easy to miss the actual start of the game and everyone kind of quiets down and it's so quiet as if you're there in person in the stadium, you're not hearing the announcer or countdown or anything. And so, you know, it's really helpful having the audio describer there, not be, you know, missing what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it was an interview I listened to with Megan where she talked about, you know, blind fans, you know, kind of knowing that a goal has been scored or a home run has been hit or, you know, there's the cheer of the crowd. But a lot of times if you don't have anyone with you or have any kind of description, you know something probably good happened, but you're not sure what exactly. So can you kind of speak to that experience?
Yeah, I think that's why I didn't like it. Growing up, going on field trips, and it's always just, you know, what happened, and just like no understanding of what was going on. And yeah, from the Mind's Eye events, I've just gotten more interested in, you know, the different types of events that they do too, and just like the baseball and hockey games I didn't really even attend much of, but also going to the other, you know, theaters and plays and different stuff. I've tried the, you know, opera shows that Megan mentioned, or the Art Museum and History Museum, which was another thing growing up of the museums were kind of not the most exciting trips for me to go on, you know, kind of the same thing of being lost. But, you know, we have the Art Museum and History Museum events that I go to, and just I feel like it's much more like approachable or less overwhelming knowing that there's going to be description and assistance. Staff is going to be knowledgeable. A lot of times it can be overwhelming if you already have to figure out your transportation there and then knowing you're going to have to constantly accommodate yourself and educate. You know, once you get there, the staff might not have ever thought about someone with vision impairment attending and not really know what to do. And if it's a new venue, all of that can be overwhelming to where, you know, someone might not attend if they aren't able to, you know, just take all of that on mentally. Yeah, just knowing the describer is going to be there and attendant and stuff, and you can go just like anyone else because there's going to be someone there to help you find your seat and describe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes me think of another point. You know, audio description can really help generate more customers, more interest in, you know, whether it's a sports team, you know, sporting events, live theater events, like you've said, museums, art museums, etc. I mean, you're really opening up your audience, your customer base. I feel like if you're making your product in general more accessible, would you agree?
Yes, and I don't really have any experience or background in this, some of these plays or art museum environments that I go to. I'm going to the events because they're audio described and trying to, you know, learn as I go, and just have a new experience.
Exactly. Yep. So I know you do some work as far as quality control, and you work with Megan and Mind's Eye on audio description. And I'm curious what's involved in that role and what kind of feedback do you provide on the description?
So from, you know, attending a lot of their events or different types of events, found out about the quality control role and ways to be more involved with Mind's Eye. It's all of their attendants after an event receive like a survey where you can provide feedback on the audio description, point out anything, or if it was too little, too much, just right, or any issues with the equipment, just kind of a check in on if there are any issues. And there's a few people that do quality control. You once in a while will attend an event like as a quality control specialist. And just kind of be paying special attention to those things, and they intentionally, you know, want people that provide good feedback in terms of you know, just being kind of thorough and explaining, like, not just that it was good, but what was good, about what worked and what didn't, or what was good about it, not just, you know, kind of short or simple answers or it was fine, but being able to talk about why description was helpful or working.
Nice. That's great. They have that option. And back over to you, Megan. I am curious what kind of feedback you've gotten and if you've kind of implemented that feedback in your approach to describing.
Yeah, absolutely. I can say that originally we would just send out feedback forms. You know, we do send back feedback forms to everyone. And 9 times out of 10, you either didn't get them or you would get the answer of like, it was great, everything was great. And you like, you know that everything's not great every time. And sometimes I would hear describers, or I would hear myself like make mistakes. Like, why didn't anyone point this out? Like, this should have definitely been in the feedback form. Like, you messed this part up. And then we realized that, you know, people were just glad to have audio description. Some people didn't want to rock the boat because they were scared if they said they didn't like something that maybe we wouldn't do it, or the venue, they didn't want the venue to know that they didn't like something because maybe they wouldn't hire us to do description anymore. So then we realized, you know, we really need to pay people to do this. And that's just, it should be part of a job. Now, nobody's quitting their day jobs to be a Mind's Eye quality control specialist. But it does put some pressure on someone when you say, okay, you're getting paid to tell me what you didn't like or what you did like. You're going to get much more honest answers. Liam in particular has been helping us with some stuff for the History Museum, some written descriptions for the History Museum. Hmm. And some stuff that after he gave us the feedback, I was like, man, that's so obvious. I can't believe that already two people on staff have gone through this. And we all said, yeah, this is great. And then we gave it to Liam and he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. This doesn't make any sense to me. Because of course we're both sighted and we're looking at a photograph and it makes perfect sense to us. And then, oh yeah, yeah, we left all the orientation until the bottom. So if we've gone through two paragraphs and didn't orient you first, it doesn't make any sense. So things like that, have been so beneficial to us. But even things like equipment didn't work right, or the directions you gave us from on the website or in the email in advance said that when I got off the Metrolink, I was supposed to turn left and you said that I was turning right and I walked 2 blocks out of the way. You know, that's a big deal. I mean, that and maybe it was because, and that was also Liam who gave me that feedback, and that was because I didn't realize there were 2 exits out of the Metrolink. So things like that are super important. And those are things that like someone else could have done that and been like, I'm never going to try this audio description thing again. Or someone who says, it was too much audio description. I was overwhelming for me. You talk too much. That's really important feedback. So all of our quality control specialists are paid contractors, and that's really important that we're paying people for their time, not just saying, hey, there's a person who's blind. Maybe they'll tell us what they like and don't like. It is appropriate either. So it's been very helpful for us.
Right, right. That's so fascinating how you guys work together and the perspectives you would have as a sighted person, Megan, versus someone who's visually impaired like you, Liam. And kind of how that all can come together, you know, for the betterment of audio description and just the whole process. Okay, well, again, we've been chatting with Megan Harms and Liam McCoy, both from Mind's Eye in the St. Louis, Missouri area. And Megan and Liam, really, really appreciate the time. Thank you guys for sharing your stories and experiences. And I found this conversation to be super educational and interesting. Hopefully my listeners did as well, and also did want to thank Mind's Eye Radio for supporting my podcast and streaming it. I'm super grateful for that outlet. So thank you guys again for joining us here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. To hear more episodes of the Eyes Free Sports podcast and to subscribe, search for Eyes Free Sports on your favorite podcast platform. Or visit eyesfreesports.com. Be sure to follow the Eyes Free Sports podcast at facebook.com/eyesfreesports and on Twitter @eyesfreesports.